Hello, and welcome to WealthSpire Advisors Beer Markets. I'm Bobby Moyer, and I'm joined with Sandy Wiggins. How's it going today, Sandy?
Great. How about you?
Doing all right. Spring is in the air. We had a very nice week last week, weather-wise, here in the Richmond area.
A little chilly right now, but going to warm up nicely.
But it's close. We're, you know, was it yesterday the first day of spring? So we're here. We're doing all right.
Yes.
And I'm just going to jump right in and have my beer now. I'm going, maybe not, and so are you. Great minds think alike, a little bit different. I'm going bottle, you're going can. But we are having Guinness today. St. Patrick's Day was Sunday a couple days ago. And no better way to celebrate a little bit of St. Patrick's Day than having a Guinness.
Sounds like a plan.
You know, Sandy, there's so many options these days with Guinness out there, or stouts, I guess. You know, I'm surprised I went with Guinness. Nothing against Guinness. It's an all-time favorite, but there's a lot of good opportunities out there that maybe next year I'll do a different stout like I did last year, but I went old traditional this time. So cheers.
Cheers.
Well, onto the markets. Today's a big day.
Fed is closing off their meeting right now.
Yeah, probably maybe not the best day to talk or best time, just because, you know, we're talking, the market could be moving all over the place right now as it is coming off the announcement. But there were no surprises from what's come out so far. And we're right nearing the close of the day. And, you know, the Fed, as expected, has decided to pause rates again. And the dot plot, which is generally an important indicator when it comes out on what Fed officials believe is going to happen over the next couple. It's not policy, right? People often mistake it for being what policy is. It's just the Fed officials put out where they think interest rates are going to be, you know, by the end of the year, next year, and the following year. And no surprise, which that what that is that they're going to cut. They expect to cut three times this year, which I think we've been saying that all year.
There was some expectation it may have been a few more cuts than that, but yeah, three seems to be the number, and you know, if things continue to show strength, we may only see two.
Well, yeah, and if you look at Fed funds rate now, two different things, right? What the Fed was saying and what the Fed funds rate, what the Fed funds futures are saying. You know, at the beginning of the year, you saw 6.7 was the probability, 6.7 rate cuts. So almost seven cuts on January 12th. Then it got all the way down to 3.8 beginning of March, March 8th, not too long ago.
A couple of days ago, down to 2.8.
Right. So the street was coming back in line with where the Fed was at. And a lot of people were concerned about that. And we talked about this earlier. And we were concerned a year ago because it was similar expectations at the end of 23 and the market did okay. And I think the answer is what we said was, if the economy is holding up and the consumer and we're growing and all these things are happening for positives and the Fed's not cutting because it has to, but because the economy is stronger than it wants it to be, the market's going to be okay with that. The market might want lower rates to stimulate the economy, but if the economy's doing okay and people are still getting paid on their cash, that's probably not a bad thing either. And the fact that the market is coming into that and the Fed, you know, not, I don't want to use the word reconfirm, but restated that even with a higher two inflation readings earlier this year, they're still expecting to be able to cut this year. I think that's a pretty positive.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, again, we were in a period of such low interest rates, artificially low for so long. We got used to that, and it's healthy to get back to a more normal rate, and we're seeing that. And so if the economy can hold up with higher rates, we might like lower rates, but maybe we don't need them.
Well, yeah, but I think it goes, you know, people are getting paid on their cash now, which means they could spend, you know, more money. And I think, you know, it helps the wealthier, you know, maybe more than it helps, you know, the lower income people. But they're going to continue to spend because their money's making more on the cash. So I think these, you know, I think this is a good environment. You know, you're seeing the market come off this news now that the Fed, with them, you know, staying where they are, the market's rallying. Small caps are up big. The Qs, technology is up big.
There's breadth in the market.
Yeah.
Equal weight. S&P's looking good.
Yep. You're starting to see a little bit off of this news too. So the market likes it. And, you know, maybe I'll just give a couple quick, you know, I don't want to get too far. The data just came out, so we're kind of going off quickly here, but you know, they tweaked a little bit of language where they took out the wording job gains have moderated since last year, but remain strong, and instead they just said job gains have remained strong. So, you know, they're showing that jobs are still doing okay. The jobs environment is staying in line. They kept in the committee does not expect it will be appropriate to reduce the target range until it has gained greater confidence that inflation is moving sustainably towards 2%. And earlier this year, we got those two hotter inflation readings that
producer price index
CPI was a tick up, a little bit hotter. And a lot of market watchers, you know, I guess it could be bull or bear, depending how you look at it, have been saying the January-February data historically has been hard to see. You know, even with the seasonally adjustments into it, it still was a little bit hotter this time of year. So they were expecting a lot of that to come down a little bit. So, you know, good to hear. I think, you know, Chairman Powell was dovish on Capitol Hill, what, a week ago, 10 days ago, somewhere in there. And he was dovish again in his press conference today. And with dovish, you know, referring to the fact that, you know, I think he's going to cut this year. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, dovish, as you said, means, you know, rates are likely to be cut. When we talk about being hawkish, we talk about rates going the other direction or at least holding them higher. So, you know, there's a lot that we can talk about there. One, you mentioned the consumer. And the labor market is strong. Mm-hmm. We've got some good numbers here that show net worth of individuals continues to rise. Last year, assets were up by broader measures by 7.4%. Liabilities only up 2.8% on some of our numbers. So net worth is increasing. Consumers continue to spend.
Well, yeah, if you're a bear, right, some of the data points that you're pointing to right here, and again, a bear meaning you think the market shouldn't be where it is, it's inflated, we're going to, you know, fall, and, you know, you're upset about it, you're showing that credit card debt's at all-time highs, right? And it's exactly what you're talking about. Sure, debt is up, liabilities in general are up, and they've climbed a lot, but if net worth is also up, if people are earning and their houses are worth more, how much of an impact is that to the consumer sentiment to be able to go out and spend? It's a positive, but if you want, we only hear about the negatives about how high debt is from a consumer standpoint, and it's concerning. Don't get me wrong, but if net worth, you have to also look at the net worth, the other side of the balance sheet, and see that price that people are also worth more as well, and that's kind of holding up a little bit of the markets.
The other
economy,
thing that you bring to mind is talking about CPI, mm-hmm. inflation, the biggest part of it, if not the biggest, one of the biggest, is certainly shelter. And we've got some good numbers there that maybe you could comment on.
Yeah, well, I think the deal with shelter is, you know, it's been probably lagging the overall CPI number. If you go back and look at CPI over the last, I don't know, 18 months or so, we peaked out in June of 2020 where we hit 9.1%. And slowly coming back down, we're at about 3.2% now. Shelter cost of CPI peaked out around, you know, March of last year at 2.6 and has slowly come back down to about 2%. But what you're seeing is you're starting to see the CPI 6-month average has been around plus 3.2% for the last 4 or 5 months and maybe 3 to 4 months. And the concern, I think, that, again, if you're a bear, is that these shelter costs are holding up CPI. And that's going to continue to have CPI be hotter and the Fed not be able to cut over the next couple of months. So shelter is the main thing, you know, services in general, but shelter is something to keep an eye on. The important thing about shelter, though, a big part of shelter, how it's calculated in CPI, is owner equivalent rent. And that's kind of seems like a weird way to calculate, you know, shelter costs. But what they do is they survey people and they want homeowners and say, what do you think you could rent your house for today? And they say whatever that is. And that's what they're going off of on the CPI number, not what true, you know, houses are going for. And the fact is the majority of people in America are homeowners, right? So they have a fixed mortgage for the most part. So this rent piece of it, if you want to call it rent, being, you know, part of CPI, it's accurate. We got to hold it to it, but I'm not sure it directly reflects what's going on out there within the market. Now, I have concerns around the housing market, and we could get into some pieces on the housing market of prices and the supply and demand and some of the issues going on there. But I do believe, and I kind of expect the CPI to continue to fall as we move on into this year and get maybe not down to 2%, but I think they could get far enough down that will allow the Fed to cut later on this year. And right now, I think you're looking at a June, July as the next possibility of a cut. You know, there's another meeting in May, so maybe they change their language a little bit to say they're looking at it just so they could telegraph the market. But it is political, and you know, the Fed's not supposed to be political, but I do believe with the election where it is, they've got to get a cut in now, or not now, in the summer, and not close, too close to the election, so they're not being blamed,
criticized for making a political move
to help one party, which is the incumbent, right? Because that would be where it's taken.
Yeah, and, I think some of there's probabilities that show 100% likelihood of a rate cut by September.
Right.
So.
Yep. So I think that's still on the table, and that was confirmed today. But I do have to keep watching shelter, and there's a lot going on in the housing market right now. You know, do you want to touch a little bit on the housing market?
Let's talk about it from a couple of perspectives. One comment though that I'll just make is I don't see shelter, the broader issue of shelter, being solved anytime soon.
No.
This is a generational issue. There's lots of things going on. Coming out of the pandemic is one thing. The buying preferences of the younger generation is something else that's influencing it. The number of houses available.
What about rates? You know?
Rates, mortgage rates.
How often do people tell me, you know, maybe I am younger, right, relative to others, but, oh, when I bought my first house, mortgage rates were 15%, right? 1981 is what everybody keeps telling me. A lot of my parents will tell me that my, clients. Yeah, I mean, it was, so I get it. Rates at, 7% are nothing compared to 15, but it's the change of where we've been for the last 30 years of rates coming down. And what builders were able to do and sellers were charge more for a house, but your monthly payment wasn't going up at all, because rates were going back down. And now, unless you're able to create more discretionary income all of a sudden out of thin air, keeping the same price and having a rate double increases your payment that is not affordable for a lot of people. So one, you have a lot of individuals who, you know, where housing prices got to, a lot of that was a result of where rates were, and now they're back higher. And that's a reset of, you know, a number of different things, right? I wouldn't want to be a home buyer in this market, a first-time home buyer. And how do you fix it? I mean, President Biden came out, I think, on the State of the Union. He put out a couple of...
A $10,000 credit for first-time buyers, and a $5,000 credit for related to credit card debt.
Right, and I mean, I think he also expanded it, which in theory, this is smart. He expanded it to, I believe, people that are in their first home and looking to upgrade, you know, because what
conventive
existing home sales, right? Yes. We have a huge issue on existing home sales right now, right? No, there's no houses, because if you have a mortgage at 3%, you don't want to move, because now you have to buy an expensive house and refinance at 7% or rebuy a house. If you're older and you want to sell your house, you have equity in this house, but a lot of the houses that out there, if you downsize, are the same price. And so you don't really feel like you're getting your money's worth. You're not getting any equity out because you're getting less of a house, even though it might be more updated. So a lot of older individuals are not willing to sell their house. And so there's not a lot of inventory. So him trying to put something out there to try to create existing home sales, you can applaud on the surface, but I don't think it's good.
It's inflationary.
I think it's very inflationary. I mean, that's, you really want, and where are these people going to go live? You know, if you have a house today and you had no kids when you bought your house, now you have two kids and you need a bigger house, where are you going to go? You got to buy a house that's way more. Is $10,000 really enough to, you know,
justify
help you?
One $10,000 credit versus, you know, $1,000 a month more in mortgage forever or for 30 years.
Right. And I think his idea was this $10,000 will cover a 1.5% interest rate increase for the next 2 years. And then at that point, rates will be lower and we'll refinance. Well, I wonder how problems happen. Things will happen. 2 years, you're going to be able to refinance at a lower rate. So buy this today. Well, what if it doesn't? We don't know what's going to happen in 2 years. And now you have all these people that get incentivized to do this to buy a house. And then in 2 years, there
doesn't work out.
It doesn't work out. Right. Exactly. So I agree with you. It's generational. There's no inventory. There's no existing home sales or very, very low. Not a lot of people moving. And the builders are trying to build maybe, but they're building a lot of multifamily. And I'm not sure that's what people want. But
that's what they can afford.
Right. Maybe that's what they could afford. They could build more in a smaller area, builders, so they could do it a lot quicker. But I'm not sure that's going to fix the problem long term. So I think the housing situation is going to be around for a while. I don't think it's all going to be fixed. But I don't know if prices could also keep going up at these levels either, because eventually where are the buyers going to be? I mean, it's just we don't have – incomes are growing and all this, but we just don't have the opportunity. It's just too expensive. So I feel for people. I think it's very challenging for any home buyer, whether it's first time or not. At least if you're not first time, your house probably has a ton of equity in it. And I think on the negative side of it, the positive is that if you did you buy your house in the last 3 years, you do have a lot of equity, so you're not going to default. So from an economic standpoint, I don't think there's a real concern over what we saw in 2008 or 9. I think the opposite is where we're at now. People aren't going to leave because they have so much equity in their house and we don't have a delinquency problem or a lot of issues like that.
Yeah, and the upper end of the market, housing market, super solid. Cash payers buying million plus houses. You know, they don't have to worry about interest rates if they've got the bank, you know, if they've got the wallet to pull that off. So upper end, higher end houses are strong.
Yeah, they're growing quick too. And there's just, again, it's the inventory side of it. And I think a lot of places where home builders are building is still away from things at this point, you know, and people don't want to live there yet. In 15 years or 10 years, they might end up being a good place. But right now it's hard to incentivize somebody to go do that. And a lot of these home builders are still incentivizing individuals with lower rates, paying their points to get lower rates and helping out. But there's a lot of, I think there's gonna be a lot of demand for a long time to come from the housing market. And, you know, what does that mean? It goes back to the shelter. Is shelter prices going to be high?
Shelter's not
going to
come down
right
as much as we might hope. And so we might need to have a longer term inflationary expectation than you know, the Fed wants 2%, great, I want 2%. Maybe we're going to end up being happy at 2.5.
Yeah, it's that's the concern. That's why I think the volatility, if you're going to argue about what rates staying where they are for longer, which some people are, that's the argument, is shelter prices are going to continue to keep CPI elevated because of this supply and demand imbalance that's going on out there. And there's probably some truth to that until people just truly can't afford it anymore.
So you talked a moment ago about, you know, tax policy or incentives that the government comes out with and the unintended consequences of that. So let's talk about electric vehicles for a moment.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that, Sandy. Let's go to one more though.
Okay.
A true example. And Jake in our office brought this one up earlier. Remember Cash for Clunkers?
Yes.
You remember what that was? Why don't you tell the people what that was?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, it was 2008 or 9, right? And they would give you cash. They then would take the car. They poured a solvent into the engine to basically make it
off the roads, right?
Yeah, can't run.
Right.
And that was an incentive to get the automobile market back up and running and
right,
and stimulate car sales coming out of the Great Recession.
That's right. And I don't think, you know, what ended up happening was, you know, I don't think it helped the lower income people that
it
wanted to
buy them because the cars, you know, they needed
parts. You want used cars and parts and all these up, fix their old cars.
Right. And now the parts and the engines and everything are not operable.
Right. Exactly. So it's funny, not funny. I think you could say this about the solar industry, right? You had solar panels being destroyed. A similar deal, I think, in 2011, 12, somewhere in there. Correct me if I'm wrong. But again, the government was paying you just to basically buy them back, and then they would destroy them. So Cash for Clunkers, this. Now the home I don't know. The government, I get why what they're doing, but it just doesn't work out ever. The government constantly tries to solve these problems that...
But what does work is capitalism from the perspective of money finding...
Yes.
The best place to be allocated.
That is 100% right, and I love that. So let's move into EVs, right? Because I think all of this continues to be EVs were supplemented by the government, right? There was a lot of government policies out there. There still are, I think, for I don't know, tax credits on EVs, electric vehicles, and, you know, we could talk about Tesla stock and how much that's gone up, and GM and Ford and everybody else was trying to go be the king in EV. And where are we now?
Ford quick cut production of their Lightning pickup truck.
Yep.
GM is slowing production. I mean, there's a list of things that
you got moving. Fisker.
Fisker's on the verge of bankruptcy.
They're considering bankruptcy. You've got Lucid was another one that was a darling. Cost cutting. You know, we talked about Tesla. Oh, my gosh, what a train wreck that is for a lot of reasons. And you know,
but
Ford,
the stock still looks so, you know.
Well, yeah, it's off.
Still priced. 20,
right, exactly. There's a
way
lot,
high.
Yeah, I think it's still way high when you look at it relative to
where it was.
Where it was, right. And, but, you know, so EVs probably can't go all electric, but hybrid sounds like a pretty good opportunity, right? You're the car guy. I look to you for my car answers.
Well, I've never driven an EV car, but I hear they're great.
Yeah,
I'm very much a gasoline diesel person, but I do think that sweet spot might be hybrid, where you extend the mileage. You're not tethered though to charging, which is a big problem. I mean, even with the build out of charging stations, there's some charging stations that are advertised as being available. You get there, and I've got a pal who's got a Tesla. He was on a trip and pulled off, made his plan to get charged, and the stations weren't working.
Yeah,
and so
it
he
takes
scrambled.
30, 45 minutes. If you've got a young kid and you've got to travel and you're going to travel for 8 hours, you're going to stop.
Or the other way is you do a 15-minute charge, go for a shorter distance, go
right.
for another 15.
Nothing but, worse than getting off the road when I'm traveling personally. I just want to go.
Yeah. So,
which is why
I don't
have one either.
Right. So,
and Toyota's been doing the hybrid model for a while.
The Prius is, Honda came out with one too, way back when. And so, you know, I like the idea of certainly helping the environment. That's very key. I'm still not sold EVs are the answer. Hybrids could be.
I'm not sold on forcing people to do it either.
Yes.
That's kind of the other thing is that with the government using, I'll say my tax dollars because I pay into the system, right? I mean, all of our tax dollars into forcing you into something that you're not ready for. And it ends up being a waste, like we've seen with some of these other things that we just talked about over and over again.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, EVs are coming off. You talked about Fisker.
Yeah, Fisker was the bankruptcy. And you know, really, China is there's a real opportunity. And I think the other thing is, the last thing I'll say maybe about EV, because we'll wrap up here soon, we got one or two other topics maybe, is I think here in America is different than overseas too. You know, you've got some of these other countries where you don't travel as much, right? You have shorter commutes. You have smaller cars is a big thing. I mean, from what I understand, we love our SUVs over here and our big trucks and like to be all big and mighty. But if you go overseas, you see a lot of, you know, bikes and smaller cars.
Scooters and mopeds,
right.
And
yeah,
motorcycles.
That can go a lot longer on a smaller battery. So, you know, I don't – maybe it's just in America. I think there might be more opportunities elsewhere. China for sure has, you know, a pretty good mousetrap on EVs over there. I think there's opportunities. But even the stocks, lithium ETF is down 11% this year, or Albemarle, which is, you know, the producer of lithium here in the States, is down 17%. Enphase Energy down 17%. TAN, another ETF that is solar focused, is down 20% year to date. And these were all darlings not too long ago, right, where you'd see hundreds of percent gains in a short period of time. So it's like a lot of things. Blockchain we saw not too long ago being up hundreds of percent. Now Bitcoin was coming back up, broke all-time highs, now has retreated a little bit. So the marijuana stocks were going up 300, 400%. So you've seen a lot of these things, these stories take shape, and they roll over eventually. And it comes back to, not that we're wrapping up exactly now, but going back to a good allocation and not chasing FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. You talk about NVIDIA, maybe that'll be forever. I doubt it. So, you know, you got to stay controlled with this. And there's a lot of good stories out there and a lot of things will run up. But hopefully we continue to see breath in the markets.
Yep. So let's touch on national debt. There's some.
Do we have to? So depressing.
Well, I think it's important. one, the numbers are staggering, and number two, the context of what it means to our economy longer term can be a concern. So what was it, 232 years to get to the first $10 trillion of debt? To add another $10 trillion to get to $20 trillion was only 9 years. To get from 20 to 30 was 5 years. And now we're adding $1 trillion of debt every 100 days. So at some point, this is going to be an issue. There's a lot of folks that are concerned about it. Other folks kind of shrug it off. And if our economy can continue to grow and we grow our way out of this, interest rates fall, the cost of borrowing goes down. You know, we've been here before, but not at these levels. So I think it's worth just chatting for a moment about.
Listen, it's unsustainable, I think. You know, I think where we are at current levels, you could still grow your way out of it. But that's not forever. Eventually, you won't be able to get to that point. And it's like anything. The market finds things to not like. You know, right now we're in an uptrend and we're finding things we do like. AI and productivity is driving the market, right? As long as we have productivity and people producing and to something to produce earnings, the economy, we can handle this debt. But as soon as a recession comes or there's negative sentiment in the market and these debt to GDP levels and the debt keeps being reported, it's going to be a concern at some point. The market, though, does have a funny way of only worrying about certain things at certain times. And we've seen this over and over again, and it's ignoring it now. And that's why I think timing the market is so hard, because you get to these things where valuations only matter at certain times, right? And sometimes I feel like market talkers will just talk about whatever the market's doing and find an excuse for it, right? If the market was down 20% right now, we'd be talking about debt and valuation. But it's not. It keeps going up, so we could continue.
Now we're talking about AI and productivity.
Right, exactly. So it's the market is sentiment driven, and sentiment's high right now because the market is all-time highs. The S&P equal weight has hit all-time highs finally. QQQ, NASDAQ hit all-time highs finally here at the beginning of March. So I'm worried about U.S. debt. We're going to have to face it at some point. But you don't know when the market's going to care. The market might not care for 5 years. The market might care in a year. We could be having this conversation and be like, yeah, the market cares now. It's just what drives what the market cares about is just the hardest part to understand. And right now, it just loves that the economy is rolling along, the consumer's strong, you know, the economy is doing okay. But the government's got to do something about debt because it is a real problem, and it will continue just to get worse, especially with these higher interest rates.
One thing you said is, you know, it's so hard to time the market. And there's an old saying, it's not timing the market, it's time in the market.
Right.
Which goes back to what you mentioned a few moments ago, having the right allocation for where you are, given your risk tolerance and time horizon. And we talk about this stuff. We want to inform our clients of what's going on so that they have a reference point. But it's virtually impossible to time the market and do it consistently. So having a good portfolio that is allocated to a mix of stocks and bonds, domestic, international, real estate.
And just trying to stay even keeled. You know, the FOMO, the fear of missing out trade is so easy to think about getting rich. You know, why is the lottery so successful? Because everybody dreams about hitting a big couple $100 billion lottery. Everybody thinks they could do it, right? It's hard. It's really, really hard. So you just got to stay even keeled. You got to have that good strategy that you're talking about. And, you know, it happens to me too. And then the market's humbling. You know, it's very humbling. So you just got to stay the course, but you have to go through the process of making sure you're on the right course. And that's a little bit of time.
Yeah.
Yep. Spend a little bit of time of understanding what you need and then build an allocation around it.
Sounds good, Bobby. Well, I think you said we've had a good session.
Always end on that boring topic of stay the course, but it's the right thing to do.
Yep. Cheers.